We have our special interviewer guest this evening, Bhakti Bimal Avadhut Maharaj. Ki! Yeah. Yes, Maharaj.
Sir Maharaj, I'm very happy to see you.
I am very happy that you are very happy.
Yeah, I came back from India. And you know, I stayed 40 days in Prayag at Kumbh Mela.
And 40 nights.
Yeah, 40 nights. Prayag, maybe more, actually, 41. In Prayag at Kumbh Mela, the largest religious gathering on the earth since time immemorial.
Yeah.
And like everybody heard, oh, Kumbh Mela, you know, just go take a holy bus. But when we came there, we've seen different groups of people. Somebody's distributing food, somebody's doing yoga, somebody's doing tapasya. People do all kinds of things there. My question to you is very simple. What it's all about?
Yes.
What it's for?
So we see everything through the lens of Srimad Bhagavatam. Once Guru Maharaj, you know, he co-opted different expressions that he found were useful. Hegelian expressions like reality is for itself, by itself, self-determination, die to live, reality the beautiful, from, so Hegel, Martineau, another one, you know, everywhere center, nowhere circumference for the infinite, Blaise Pascal. But another one he got from a mathematician, I think, was as quality increases, quantity decreases. Sometimes he will say, quality gives us relief from mathematics. It's a very interesting expression. What do you mean? Quality gives us relief from mathematics means mundane calculation, mundane assessment of things. What is a mundane assessment? Whenever you judge anything on the basis of misperceived self-interest. So the Bhagavatam says in the beginning, we're going to deal with what there's Shreyas and Preyas. Preyas means what appears to be immediately beneficial or what's immediately in your self-interest. But Shreya, as in Shreya, Kairava, Chandrika, Shreya in other places, means what's ultimately beneficial for you. So when we look at everything through the lens of egocentricity, like a baby, you know, they have words that define children. Whenever I see these little toddlers, there's this one stage where they just go, mine! Like if you interact with them, and you something that's there, they go, mine! Right? They can't say many words, they can say mine. Right? So they're just naked, they can't hide themselves, they can't disguise their egocentrism yet. Right? So it makes them interesting. Just as a footnote, mothers know what word, it's not, there's the first word your child said, but then there's also a word that defines your child. So my mother once told me, because she said about my, I have two brothers, she said about me, she said, he was the last one to start talking. But once he started, he never stopped. And then she said, what was the word that defined me? She said, now. So someone has mine, my word was now. And my word is still now. but that means projecting what we think. We've misconceived who we are, right? What we hear from Manu, tamasa bahurupena vestita karma hetuna. When he was telling the sages, not only human beings, but he said, you see these trees, these animals, these insects? They're also dressed in their karma. You're dressed in your karma as a human being. They're dressed in their karma as an animal. It's all karmic dress. So Guru Maharaj makes this point about sangskar and equating it to acquired tendencies, right? After all this reincarnation, life after life, lifetime after lifetime, it's not without its impressions. Like in art, they, you know, the palimpsest, You know what a palimpsest is? It's a painting, and then they found another painting on top of another painting on top of another painting. So he's saying the acquired tendencies that have been acquired by so many mental impressions that you've gathered life after life. It's not that you just lived one life and then you start another one, tabula rasa, clear. No, you have many impressions from previous life that form acquired tendencies and acquired prejudices means, which means you have a natural tendency to view things in a certain way, right? Whether it's on the basis of national identity, social identity, socioeconomics, gender, all of these things factor in how we view the world, and not only how we view the world, but how we view ourselves. So the reason I'm giving this background information is we are interacting with the world, the secular world and the religious world, on the basis of a misconceived notion of self and subsequently self-interest. So sometimes Guru Maharaj will make the point and say, yes, actually you should move on the basis of your self-interest, but you've misconceived yourself. That's the problem. So, and that's what I mentioned about social networking. People are very happy to express themselves, but that self you're expressing, is that your pure, unadulterated self, free from all acquired prejudice and acquired tendencies? Is it the expression of that self, or is it this acquired self in karmic dress that's actually acting as some sort of a filter or a covering? And so what your natural loving propensities and tendencies are being expressed basically as a consumer. So even when it comes to religion, back to Guru Maharaj's point, as connotation increases, denotation decreases, right? Quality and quantity. So in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and there's three slokas that set the stage. Sometimes Guru Maharaj will say, Vyasadeva. Remember, it goes from Krishna to Brahma, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye, to Brahma, Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Sukadev, Sukadev to Parikit, Sutta Goswami to the sages. But he's saying, anyway, Vyasadeva, he said, pen these three introductory slokas, Janmadyasya Yataha, Dharmak Prochita Kaita Votra, and Nigamat Kapator Galitampalam. He said, and then sent it to the market. Like he put these slokas on, compiled the whole thing, here's the introduction, here are other things to understand, and then he published it, or in Guru Maharaj's words, sent to the market. So those three slokas are very important. And we hear from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Srup Damodar appeared to him in a vision, and gave a unique interpretation of these slokas and said, I want you to do a collection. The Bhagavad Purana is like an 18,000 rayed sun giving illumination to people who've lost their spiritual vision in the Kali Yuga, right? They no longer understand what is real religion, what's not religion, what is Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. So many things. So the Bhagavad Purana, it's like an 18,000 rayed sun that's risen, because after Krishna leaves the world, it's plunged in the darkness. But Srip Damodar telling Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you take 1,000 of the 18, gave some guidelines, and on these three introductory slokas, also gave some novel interpretation. And what we understand is he was told, they should be expressed in terms of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan. So the first sloka means sambandha again, but the second sloka is abhideya, how to proceed. And there it says, dharma prochita kaita votra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. This is going to be the approach. What is it? No kaitava dharma. No cheating, not using religion to divinity to serve your lower purpose. That's karmakanda. There's a section of the Vedas that's like that. Because we can say, well, that's also a gradual way of evolving spiritually from the mundane position. Bhagavad Purana is saying, no, this is the Amala Purana. It's spotless. None of that kind of thing will be in this book. It's going to be a pure, direct approach. Right? Dharma prochita kaita votra paramo nirmatsaranam satam nirmatsarja. There can be no envy expressed towards the devotees of the Lord. Some guidelines are being given there. So as an example, you mentioned the Kumbh Mela. Right? We know people in India, they understand the power of religion and religious performance. But most often, it's mentioned by in Mahaprabhu's teachings to Rupa Goswami, he's saying they are, Vedavadarata. They're mouthing Vedic expressions, but it's lip deep. They have some ulterior motive, which Rupa Goswami says cancels it from being actual real devotion. So the ulterior motive is material gain to benefit materially. I mentioned at the time of Shivaratri in Vrindavan, which was it just now or within a few days? Anyway, so people will go get Jamuna water and bring it and give it to the archaks, the pujaris, the priests, and then the priests will offer that in their name to the deity of Shiva. But one man, he went and got his Jamuna jal, that water, in a glass jar. Then he brought it to them, and as they were offering to the deity of Shiva, they dropped the jar and it broke, and there was glass everywhere, 1,000 pieces. But the legend, the rumor is that that man, he became a lakhpati, or a crorepati, a millionaire. So now, what is this yearly event descended into? People bring glass jars of Jamuna jal to the pujaris and they break them in front of the deity. It doesn't slip out of their hands. They're handed the glass jar and they break it. So if you go by that temple on this day, you'll see a mountain of broken glass everywhere. So what was initially meant to be some sort of honoring or showing reference to Mahadev Shiva has deteriorated, descended into some kind of gross ritual meant to satisfy your lower purpose. Gopal, who was with you at the Kumbh Mela, he knows about the Govardhan Parikrama. We think, oh, how wonderful, so many pilgrims. And we're not saying everyone is like this, but he knows. He said, oh, Maharaj, they are getting very specific in their, while they're doing the parikrama, they want cable television, a nice TV, things.
Internet,
you know, they're doing the circumambulation thinking, and if you can bless me in this way. That's why, and we'll think, oh, is this just some modern aberration? It's even in the Bhagavatam. Parikit Maharaj says to Sukadev Goswami, he says, we see that Mahadev Shivji, he's naked, he's only covered in ashes. Right? And sitting under the banyan tree, whereas Gurudev said, Ahibhushanam, wearing snakes as garlands, and the classical picture of Shiva. Right? He said, so he has nothing, but his followers, they have so much material opulence. Right? The worshippers of Shiva. He said, whereas we see Narayan, Vishnu, the goddess of fortune is at his feet, massaging his feet. One of Lakshmi's name is Chanchal. Chanchala means she's, it means different things. Unsteady means wealth is an unsteady position in this world. She's always, but she's never unsteady or deviant in her position at the lotus feet of Vishnu. said, but we see that his devotees, he's got the goddess of fortune at his feet, his devotees are poor and impoverished. Why? We would think, no, the Vishnu devotees, they should have all the money, and the Shivites, they should be impoverished. And that's where this famous sloka appears. He says, yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanamshanai. If Hari, and that's why the word Hari is used here, means who, stealer, one who takes away, anugraha, if he actually gives his mercy to you, he'll take everything away from you. And that will leave you in an utterly dependent position upon his mercy. So in these religious, so-called religious performances, it's the opposite for many, maybe for most, of what is actually being promoted in a book like the Bhagavad Purana, which is to be blessed with mundane opulence is not a blessing at all, but rather a distraction from spiritual culture. Jiva Goswami makes the point. He says, the God's position is not good. The animal position is not good. Animals suffering the cumulative effects of bad karma, you can say in a sentence. So they're now moving according to instinct. He said, but the gods, they're suffering enjoying the fruits of karma. No interest in spiritual life for them in their heavenly position and atmosphere. Right? So he said, the best position is in the human section, where you have generally equal amounts of suffering and happiness. So in the Narada section of the 10 seed slokas he's giving to Vyas, one of them is, tasyeva hetu prayate tu kovido na labhyate yat brahmatam upariyada. He said, just as you don't have to try for suffering, and suffering's forced upon you, actually, you've got a certain amount of enjoyment you'll experience too. You don't need to try for that either. These two things will come automatically on the basis of your past performance. Saying, so what you should do with your energy is dedicate to yourself to that thing. Brahmatam upariyada. You don't get wandering the length and breadth of the world of misconception. What is that? The Ramanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. The seed of love and affection, of Krishna Bhakti, right, of devotion, that you don't get. Only the Bhagyavan Jeev, the fortunate souls, they get this connection with the Lord and his devotees. And then what does the Bhagavatam say as a sadhu? Saraswati Thakur said, sadhu means one who cuts sharply with sometimes unpleasant language. Right? He said, if a sadhu becomes a flatterer, that's an enemy. But if he, with sometimes sharp or unpleasant language, does this operation, that'll be to my benefit. So Sukadev's telling Parikshit Maharaj, understand the difference between Preya and Shreya. What's immediately beneficial may not be good for you in the long run. Right? You should be interested in what's ultimately beneficial for you. And that's the subject matter of the Bhagavatam. So we find in the Bhagavatam, in the eighth canto, the devas and the asuras, right? They're both seeking the same thing, apparently. And this is interesting. As Guru Maharaj said, happiness, everyone wants happiness. An atheist, agnostic, or theist, we're not going to argue theistic issues. Everyone, we should agree upon, wants happiness, joy, happiness, love, affection. Also, they're searching for immortality, whether through religion or science, through technology. People want to extend the range of their lifespan. So here, ostensibly, in this pastime, right, of the churning of the milk ocean by the devas and the asuras, with the Mandara hill on the back of the Kurma avatar, as depicted at the Suvarnabhumi airport in Bangkok. When you clear customs, what could be more perfect than that? And then Angkor Wat also. But what's interesting here is there's a superficial level of interpretation of what's going on there, and then a deep level of interpretation. So superficially, they're trying to achieve amrita, nectar. Why is this word used? There are other words that mean nectar too, like sudha. Why amrita? Mrityu, we're living, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. We're living in the world of mortality, where everyone and everything has to die. Everything, if we did time lapse on all of us, we'd see, as they try to do, they shoot pictures of someone for 10 years, 20 years, you'd see we're disintegrating. Our eyes just can't process it, do the frame rate. Right? We're actually disintegrating as we view each other. Right? What did Guru Maharaj say? We're in a cage. We're encaged in danger. We're living in the world of mortality, in a cage of danger, the human body. So anyway, so mrityu means death, like mrita. Amrita means that which makes you deathless or immortal. So the gods and the demons, they're saying, will churn this milk ocean and achieve the nectar of the gods, which is amrita, immortality. Right? So we hear, while they're churning, Lakshmi Devi comes out, the moon. And interestingly, there are some who say the moon may have come from an ocean and the earth. There's so many things. Uchaisrava, the divine horse, and who else? Airavata, Indra's elephant. Parijata flower tree, many things. Right? And what are we told? Kurmadev, the Kurma avatar, he has an itch on his back that he cannot reach. People like to make up, conundrums about the omnipotence of God. Can God make a rock so big he can't lift it? Things like this. Yeah, and then he can lift it as a child with the little pinky on his left hand if he chooses to. But here, it's non-stereotypical and more interesting. It's the opposite of the way they usually pose these questions. Here, he has an itch on his back, and who is omnipotent, right? Who can do anything? He cannot itch his back, right? So what does that allow for? It allows for the devotees to get some seva. Right. So then they put the Mandara mountain on his back. They're churning with Vasuki, and it's in the right spot, and it's relieving him of the itch. And just like when we're relieving ourselves of an itch, we go like, ah. Right. So also Kurmana, he's going, it's regulating his breathing, and his breathing in a very beautiful rhythmic fashion is going in and out. And what are we told? The waves of the ocean are echoing that breathing in sympathy. And that if we're by the ocean, a devotee meditating on the divine pastimes and forms of the Lord can think that here, we know the ocean, it makes this mystical sound. We can think, oh, that's the breathing of the Kurma avatar. It's still moving to the rhythms of the Lord's breathing. Right? And then we know from this that the two elements are there, the nectar, but also while they're churning that creme de la creme-like substance, the impurities are being cast off. Right? What do you call that process? Like, is it a centrifuge or the opposite one, where things spin and they separate into two? Anyway, so the nectar is being generated, but that poison is coming, the impure aspects. And which they enlist Mahadev Shiva to, he drinks the ocean, takes the ocean in his palm, right? Which is interesting, as we hear, Samasrita ye padapalava plavam mahat padam punya yasho murari bhavam budhir vatsa parampadam parampadadya vipadam natesham. That the insurmountable ocean of ignorance can be reduced to a drop. Right? There's some mystical connection here. So for Mahadev Shiva, he drinks all this poison, what's called the Kalatuta. Is it Kalatuta? Yeah. Kalakuta. Kalatuta, Katutam. And the end result is his neck becomes blue, right? And he becomes known as Nilkanta, means blue throat. And then that allows for the nectarine substance to be generated. Mohini Murti comes and steals the nectar, and Mohini is actually Krishna assuming a feminine form, expressing his beauty through a female form, and they're all bewildered, and she steals the pot of nectar. A few drops come, and as the legend goes, those drops land in different parts of India, and so Kumbha means a pot. It's where one of the drops of nectar fell, and therefore they go for this pastime. But so ostensibly, the demigods and the asuras were searching for nectar, for immortality. So, or you can say liberation, right? Mukti. And to this day, people are going for these religious performances, hoping to achieve mukti, liberation, to become free from death, living in the world of mortality, etc. But is that what is being promoted by the Bhagavatam? Right. It's the Bhagavatam promoting generic mukti, deathlessness. Devotees have no interest in immortality if it lacks service opportunities or seva. Right. Just like express kaivalyam narakayate, what to speak of that, any type of so-called mukti or liberation without service possibility, narakayate, it's hellish. No opportunity to serve. Right. Guru Maharaj says, in explaining the sloka, das kori beton mori deho prema dan. Beton means salary, where the devotee is saying, let me serve. And as my salary, let it be preem. He said, but this is compound interest. It's like when a capitalist invests money, when the interest comes, they don't take the interest and go and enjoy it. You see, and a pure capitalist takes the interest and expands what was in the investing capital. Then more interest, it keeps growing. So he's saying for a real servitor, they invest all their serving capacity, serving the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga, then when the interest comes from that, they use it for increased serving capacity. That's their idea. So what is the, why would the Srimad Bhagavatam, if it's told in the beginning slokas, the foundation slokas, Nigama kalpa turor galitam palam shukamukhad amrita davashamyatam amrita Shukamukad Amrita Dravasamyatam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. Why would Sukadev be interested in that? He's already liberated. That's why it's the Paramahansa Sangita. You understand? If Amrita, announced in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, is not generic mukti, which it cannot be, because Sukadeva's already liberated. That's why he's the speaker of the Bhagavatam. Parinisti topi nairagunye uttama sloka lilaya grihita cheta rajar se akyanam yadaditavan. Right? He's saying, I was already situated in the nirguna plane. That's beyond mortality. So why would he be interested in seeking immortality in its general conventional sense? That nectarine substance announced in the beginning, tad artoyam brahmasutranam bharatartha vinirnaya gayatri vasya ruposho, paribringhita. Anyway, so we're told the Vedas are like a tree. The Vedanta is the pushpa flower of that tree, and the Bhagavatam is the fruit, the fully ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. So what is the conception of amrita or nectar that's being presented by the Srimad Bhagavatam? It cannot be generic mukti, becoming freed from death. But it's rather muktir hitvanyata rupam swaropena vivastiti. The swarup of the mukta is a chid vilas form, the form of the servitor. They're asked, that's what Narada is telling Vyas. You've not informed them of their possibility in the liberated plane. That their real identity lies as a servitor in the nectar world. Srinvantu vrishe amritasya putra. Again, saying, you're children of the nectar world. What is that nectarine substance, Guru Maharaj is told? That is why this pastime is included in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and why it is again alluded to in the 12th canto. It's saying the Bhagavatam has to be consistent thematically throughout. It's not that one section is recommending one thing and another section is recommending something else. There's only one theme going throughout the whole book. If you don't understand that each pastime or each section is pointing you in that direction, that means to misunderstand. So, as he told, Arto Yam Brahmasutranam, it's the real meaning. And on the basis of this, Guru Maharaj gives his interpretation of Gayatri. So what does Bhagavatam culminate in? Yadamiyam Mahima Sri Bhagavatyam Katayam Pratipatam Anubhutam Apya Labideya Tad Akila Rasa Murti Shamalila Avalambam Madhura Rasadi Sri Radha Pada Padmam Prapadye. Saying, although ostensibly her name is not mentioned, Anaya Radita Nunam Bhagavan Harir Ishara Yanovihaya Govinda, her name is not ostensibly mentioned. Everything is meant at every step of the way. Right? That is. Pratipadam means at every step. It's meant to take us in the direction of the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani and that service. Srimati Radharani is the Ujvala Rasa Acharya. It means Madhura Rasa, Janmad Yasya Yataha, Adi Rasa, Mukya Rasa. The Srimad Bhagavatam is about Rasa. And as Guru Maharaj is told, what we're being told in this pastime is the ultimate concept of amrita or nectar is madhura rasa. That's what it is about. Not simply to get free from negative engagement, get free from the karmic, impending karmic reactions of negative engagement, but to get a positive service connection, to get a service connection in the positive domain. And not only that, but of the highest type. So the ultimate nectarine substance they should be searching for is madhura rasa. Not that how by performing some religious activity I can become further entangled in the mundane world. That's not a blessing. So Srila Prabhupada, in his meeting with Guru Maharaj in Mayapur, 1973, he gave himself as an example. He said he had many ideas in his household life, and really he was trying to do some business successfully so that someday he could promote Krishna consciousness, but everything, Prabhupada laughed, he said, Yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanamjanai. Everything fell apart. Krishna took everything away from him. Till he was in Vrindavan. And he joked, the others, he said, the people, they give all their money to their relatives and then come to Vrindavan with their mala. He said, but Krishna is very intelligent. He said, you have come to me with your beads. But what did you do with your money? He said, but now I'm in Vrindavan, I have no money, no one cares about me anymore. All the family connections were only maintained as long as I was financially viable. Now that I have nothing, he said, the only thing that remains of my family life is a long list of names. And he said, actually, he wrote a postcard to Srila Guru Maharaj saying, I am totally disgusted with human civilization. He said, rather, I think the animals are more friendly to me. So, yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanamshanai. He saw it as the Lord's mercy. Krishna took everything away from him. He signed his poem, Your Insignificant Beggar, Bhaktivedanta Swami, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Right? But he said, and that na chao, my Lord, upon arriving in America, if you've brought me here to dance, then make me dance, O Lord, make me dance. He offered himself as an instrument of divine will. For what purpose? To bring people in connection with the ultimate nectarine substance, Krishna consciousness, which is the property of Srimati Radharani and her friends. They extend Krishna consciousness to other. Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur wrote one book called the Radha Rasa Shuddha Nidhi. Shuddha Nidhi means nectar ocean. The nectarine ocean of Radha Rasa, of service, Radha Dasyam, of service to the holy lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Wherein by jiva souls and all others realize their ultimate good fortune. Shreya, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidyavadhu Jivanam. Mystically encrypted there, the Madhura Rasa identity of her serving group. So, it's only by the grace of our Guru Varga that we can really understand ultimately what's behind all of these events, pastimes, celebrations, festivals, what they're originally meant to celebrate. If anything, and this is the point I want to make, if anything has any real substance to it, it means Advaya Gyan. There's just this one thing. It's Krishna conception. If it seems to be promoting something else, then either it's inauthentic or becomes so adulterated it's turned into something else, or we don't understand its actual purpose. So we always begin, beginning, middle, and end, is Krishna conception. And that's what the Bhagavatam is announcing in the beginning, this Kaitava Dharma. Religion with ulterior motive is not within the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna conception proper. But it's about offering oneself in service to Krishna. Not that, you know, God give us our daily bread, that Krishna should come down and serve our lower base purpose, even in the guise of religious performance. Still, what do we find in the pages of the Bhagavatam? Akama sarvakama ba moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. the second canto, saying, if you are akam, desireless, sarvakam, full of desire, mokshakama, you want moksha, liberation, whatever it is, go to Krishna for that. Just go to Krishna for that. Right? Because they're so convinced that when you come in the relativity of Krishna conception, you'll be so enamored, so charmed by the beauty, charm, and sweetness of Krishna, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham, that you'll automatically, Bhajaniya Sarva Sadguna Vishishta, you'll want to offer yourself in service to Krishna, and those ulterior desires and motives will fall away. Param drishtva nivartate niraharasya dehina rasovarjam rasopyasya. That they're just convinced. If you get this higher taste, you'll forget about the taste for lower things. That's what Jnane Priyasam Udapasana Manta Eva is about. Stane Sita Shruti Katam Tanuman Monobir. Hear about Krishna from someone who has real love and affection for Krishna, substantially. And when that enters your heart, the flag of Krishna conception will be planted in its soil and ultimately spread its influence and claim the heart in the ultimate victory. Srila Prabhupada in one purport says something very interesting in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, when pure devotees speak about Krishna, their voice and the vibration of their voices, he said, it's saturated with saffron mercy particles from the lotus feet of Krishna. It's a very unusual expression there. He said, the voice has within it saffron mercy particles from the holy lotus feet of Krishna. So when that vibration enters your heart, it's putting some of the saffron mercy particles from the lotus feet, sprinkling them upon your heart. So that Radharani says in Brahmar Gita, Yadanucharita lila karna piyush viprut. Piyush here means nectar. Viprut. Sadkrid dadana viduta danda dharma vinashta. He said, if you get a drop of this type of nectar, dharma vinashta, you'll lose your attraction for everything. She's saying it in her madness as if it's something undesirable. She's saying, it will ruin your life. You'll lose all attraction for everything. And now we get to the point. If you really come in touch with the nectarine substance, you lose all attraction for the mundane. So the idea that coming in connection with that, you'll become enriched in the mundane, is Kaitava Dharma. Really, if you come in touch with a drop of that substance, she's saying, on your heart, destroys all mundane interest. So, pravista karna rundrena swanam babam sororuham dunoti shamalam Krishna shalyasya yatasharat. Krishna conception enters the heart through the channel of the ear. Guru Maharaj said the ear through sound has a direct channel to the heart. He said that's why you have to be careful what kind of sound you put in your ear. Said mundane sound has a tendency to awaken mundane desires. There's spiritual sound vibration having the opposite effect. And lastly, Prabhupada liked to quote this one sloka from the 10th canto that makes me think about this. Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatu ke swadhyaya kalatradishu boma ijadi yatirta buddhi shalinena karhachid janeshu abhigeshu saeva gokara. So many slokas Prabhupada quoted have the word ass in them. They're like heavy. You don't give up the world by being, you know, like, what do you say, namby-pamby, lukewarm about things. Spiritual life is the ultimate battle. It's not for weak-minded, impotent people. This is the ultimate noble fight, noble struggle. Right? It's a brave act to admit one's, to candidly admit Atmanivedan, that not only can I not help others, I cannot help myself. That's not a sign of weakness. It takes courage to make that statement. But at any rate, in this verse it said, Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatu ke. If with your buddhi you're thinking you're tridatu, right? Kapabhittabhayu, like the Ayurveda, saying if you think you're that, those elements are tridatu ke. What is the next line? Boma ijadi. Or he's talking about all the things that disqualify one. If you think the land you were born in is worshipable because you were born there. And now I know there's 100 Russian jokes that we could tell, but we won't. About the motherland. Some of my friends, my Russian friends, used to tell me these jokes. I will not mention them at this time. But so, and if you think, and that's not what to speak of, everybody thinks that. Right. The land they were born. Why? Because you were born there. But anyway, Janeshu abhigeshu saeva gokura. Why is it here? It says, no better than a cow or an ass. Usually we're worshiping the cows, but in this sense, cows being mentioned, they say that a cow will show affection to the dead calf. Will lick the dead calf. They're saying, showing affection for this tridatu body is like that. So they're saying, yatirta buddhi shalale nakarhichid. Those who go to holy places for some reason other than to get the association of genuine saints who are actually nullifying all of the sins being brought by these millions of people visiting the holy places. If you don't seek out and find the actual substantial devotees, you're no better than a cow or an ass. That's the statement of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada loved that sloka. So, and the ego of the Nagas, reminded of Gurudev going to the Himalayas. And in like, they have different caves. One cave's like 300-year-old yogi. Other cave, 700 years old. So he goes to the 300-year-old yogi, talking to him. Back and forth. Then he gives him a little donation. Goes to visit the 700-year-old yogi. And when the 700-year-old yogi hears that he visited the 300-year-old yogi, he goes, he's just a kid. He just moved in. He's like, so that ego. Guy's bogus. And Guru Maharaj and Gurudev used to laugh and tell the story of Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. Once, Bhakti Hridoy Ban Maharaj, the leader of the Mela, and this is years ago, it's called the Maha Mandaleshwar, and he gets to ride in on an elephant. So one year, Ban Maharaj wanted to get that position for propaganda purposes. So they said, we can make you Maha Mandaleshwar, but only if you can get us a huge quantity, like 100 kilos of government-stamped ganja, like the good stuff. Right. So he had a connection with the Mysore government, so he got the government-stamped ganja for all the sadhus, the Nagababas. So that allowed him to become the Maha Mandaleshwar and sit on the elephant. But what used to make Guru Dev and Guru Maharaj laugh was that he invited Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj along to do kirtan. So Babaji Maharaj, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He's doing the kirtan behind the elephant. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to the circus or not. And if you, when elephants move and stand behind them, they leave some of their remnants, which are like these big balls of elephant remnant. So why Gurudev and Guru Maharaj would laugh is Babaji Maharaj would be doing the kirtan, Ban Maharaj is riding on the elephant, and he's like dodging elephant stool balls trying to do kirtan. So the whole thing is descended into a spectacle, the long and short of it. But, Mark, but you missed the answer. But you can ask a question too. In other words, just because you weren't here for this part, the Bhagavatam presents this pastime. Right? Remember, other Puranas, they present some of the same pastimes. Why do they tell them differently? Because one Purana is a Rajasic Purana. Another Purana is a Tamasic Purana. Another one is a Sattva description. And what is the Bhagavatam? The Amala Puranam. So when the Bhagavatam is presenting something, as I told, it's consistent. What it stated in the beginning is Amrita. It's stated at the end, and the Amrita, the nectarine substance, is Madhura Rasa. And that's why those pastimes are mentioned. Not about becoming immortal or the nectar of the gods and this, that, and the other thing. Those are all superficial representations of this. And I pointed out, when you come in connection with this nectarine substance, you give up all affinity for the world. You don't come in connection with that to, further entangle yourself in the mundane, or any type of mundane, higher or lower, even the mundane of, heaven. Trivedyamam somapa putapa pa in the Gita. Yeah.
Were you trying to represent in a nutshell the meaning of this event? The real benefit of this event.
Is to come in connection with the ultimate nectarine substance, which is Madhura Rasa, which is presented only by authorized representatives of the Krishna consciousness movement.
I have a question.
Yeah.
And I think you partially answered about quality, decrease, and quantity.
Yes.
The quantity.
Yeah, just give one example of that. Guru Maharaj said, if we say, who accepts Bhagavad Gita? Everyone, yes. Not only in India, but, Annie Besant, Juan Mascaro, the English writer, everyone, they're praising Emerson, Thoreau, people will say Hitler liked it. Everybody likes Bhagavad Gita. Right? Say, now we're going to increase the connotation. We say, well, Bhagavad Gita has to be understood in the light of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then it starts narrowing. Now he said, you're left with Vaishnavas. Sri Vaishnavas, Madhva school, Gaudiyas, they will all, yes, Bhagavad Gita should be in, now the Mayavadis, no, we don't agree with that. So now we've increased the connotation, the denotation is decreased. But then we say, and Srimad Bhagavatam, Premo, Pumarto, Mahant. Srimad Bhagavatam has to be understood in the light of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then you lose the Madhvas and the Sri Vaishnavas and you're left with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So as connotation increases, denotation decreases. As quality increases, the quantity apparently decreases, except with one note. That plane that is most exclusive is all inclusive, so that even an atom of Goloka Vrindavan, which appears, where we're told, a Prakrita, 32 square miles, 16 kroshas, within an atom are the whole Vaikuntha worlds, and which a clouded portion is the mundane.
Okay, well, that's all wonderful. But what we as the Gaudiyas believe is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to liberate all world.
Yes.
at this very time of month of Magh, of Magh Mela, he went to Dashashvamedha Ghat and met Sri Rupa Goswami.
Right. All right, wait. Stop right there. Okay. Who is Rupa Goswami? The Bhakti Rasa Acharya. So I told the other day, Sanatan Goswami, Bhakti Siddhanta. Sambandhagyan. Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasa. So what are they're at the Dashashvamedha Ghat, as you mentioned, and that's in this. And what is the subject matter? Rasa. Bhakti Rasa. Which culminates in what? Madhura Rasa, Radha Dasyam, the prospect of the potential of being a servitor in that divine domain where, what is it? Bargo by Brishuban, Ajatma Bibhavai, Ekatma Aradhana Sri Puram. It's very beautifully expressed by Guru Maharaj. He's saying, the Sri Puram, it's the city, the world that is illumined by Srimati Radharani's service. Just as the sun illuminates this world, she's illuminating the service world. That's what it is about. That's what Mahaprabhu and Rupa Goswami are talking about in that place.
So the question is, at this very time, at this very place,
yes,
there were apparently a huge amount of people.
Quantity.
Some of them went to see Mahaprabhu.
Oh, at the time he was there?
Yeah.
Yes.
At the time he instructs Rupa Goswami.
Yes.
It seems like he came to deliver the whole universe.
Yes.
That's what we believe in.
Yes.
So, and we can understand, he is giving very deep substance to Srila Rupa Goswami. And at that point, we don't know how many people were witnessing this unique conversation, the knowledge transmission. It could be like maybe few, maybe.
Well, no, but we hear gods descend, right? And the sloka is that Rupa Goswami, Sureshanam Durgam Gati Atisha, what is it? No. Sado Pasha Sriman Dritta Manujakai Pranayatam Vahad Bir Girvane Girisha Parameshti Prabhritibi. Brahma and Shiva, they're descending. Gods and goddesses are descending in human forms. So we cannot, this is not based upon the quantity of people who showed up at the house, or, you know.
I'm trying to talk about that. I'm trying to say, at that point, the transmission been giving. Now, how this very high substance, which really meant for self-realized people, can be distributed and understood by a common mass of people?
Well, it's told, when Raghupati Upadhyay, the famous Kam Prati Katayitami Se Sloka, he's saying, who would believe me and who can I tell it to? Guru Maharaj, and he printed his article in one of the Gaudiya Math publications, said, an implication of this inference is that now that you've come, people will come in connection. They'll be told and they'll believe it. So we see, by the mercy of Mahaprabhu, and his devotees. Look, we're sitting here, you say, how will it happen? We're sitting here in Chiang Mai, Thailand, right? Russians, Americans, Hungarians, Ukrainians, all different types of people, right? People all over the world are watching and hearing this as we speak. That's one way that it's being distributed. They're coming in connection with that divine substance. On what level do they, you, me, or any of us appreciate that? That is another thing.
That's what I'm really interested in. If there are any new people who's watching our show today,
yes,
I'd like them to give feedback what they think.
Yes, that would be good.
Yeah, so.
And you can visit our site on Theistic Media Studios on Facebook and tell us all about it.
Because, see, we speak about very
and win a kilo of Chavanprash from the fine folks at Dabur.
Well, the point is, really, we're speaking very high things, which we think are the greatest things. And people will be connecting with us simultaneously or by some, you know, accident or by friend, we'd like to get some feedback from them, what they think about that. Sometimes.
Yes, but that would be good. And also, we can understand from the way an epidemic spreads, how things can spread. By certain things, you get one little particle the virus, a little particle of this substance in you, and gradually it will fully express itself until you're in a full-blown position. And that's what we're talking about. This substance, see, you missed certain parts. A particle of this substance that enters the heart through hearing from pure devotees, authentic source. Once it's in the heart, the experts, just as research scientists, doctors, they know, when you get even a particle of this virus, gradually it will fully express itself in a particular condition. Oh no, but right now I feel, no, we know. Once you've got that, it will gradually fully, and it's similar to that, but in a good way. Once a drop of this substance enters the heart, in a matter of time, before it fully expresses itself and envelops and engulfs the heart and then inundates it in this nectarine substance.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Looking forward our viewers' feedback.
Yes. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Swami Avadhut, for your encouraging words.